I a les 10 a 25, les 5 a 25, seguim en directe aquí al 107.9 FM, a Ràdio Illa Formentera, .cat, i avui tenim l'immens plaer, l'honor, de xerrar del que ha sigut una de les figures del bàsquet en aquest país, fa 30 anys, estem parlant d'Audie Norris, en aquest cas originari de Jackson, a Mississippi, un estat del profund sud-americà, Audie Norris, que avui doncs té 64 anys, és considerat com el millor jugador estranger que ha tingut mai el Barça de bàsquet, o si més no, segurament el més emblemàtic, el que tenia doncs més més prestigi i més carismàtic, sí, sí. En els 6 anys que va jugar al Barça, doncs va guanyar 3 lligues i 2 copes del rei. En aquesta casa hem volgut donar sempre molta importància doncs al bàsquet, hem xerrat amb gent com ara De La Cruz, hem xerrat amb Orenga, hem xerrat amb en Pocheco, el nostre vasí, i molts d'altres, i avui podem saludar a l'altra banda del fil telefònic a l'Atomic Dog, a l'autèntic Audie Norris. Muy buenos días, Audie.
Buenos días.
¿Qué tal? Gracias por acompañarnos esta mañana. Estás en las Canarias, en otro archipiélago, pero sabemos que alguna vez has estado por Ibiza y Formentera.
Bueno, estoy pasando unos días celebrando el cumpleaños de mi mujer y mi cumpleaños también, y hemos hecho una escapadita.
Muy bien. Oye, hacemos la entrevista, la empezamos en castellano, pero si algún momento te sientes más cómodo cambiando al inglés, no hay problema. Yo lo que haré es traducir de forma consecutiva lo que tú digas. Audie, tú naciste en 1960 en un estado, diríamos, del sur de los Estados Unidos. Y por lo tanto, pues cuando tú eras pequeñito, viviste pues todo el movimiento a favor de los derechos civiles, que supongo que en Mississippi no fue fácil, fue duro. ¿Qué recuerdos tienes de aquella época?
Hombre, antes de el gobierno ha cambiado las reglas de integrar los colegios, no había tanto problema en nuestro barrio, porque nuestro barrio era totalmente de gente de color. Uh-huh. Y nosotros vivíamos en nuestra parte y los blancos vivían en su parte, y no había tanto ¿cómo se dice? Interacciones entre nosotros. Uh-huh. Hasta que la ley cambiado de los colegios tienen que hacer un intercambio de color blancos o negros en este fue en 68, 69, por ahí. Uh-huh. Desde allí había muchos problemas, porque nosotros no queríamos ir a su colegio y ellos no quieren que vienen los negros a su barrio, su colegio tampoco. Entonces había mucho policía, mucho peleas, mucho insultos, porque ellos no, los blancos no han venido a nuestro barrio para ir al colegio. Nosotros fuimos a suyo, ¿entiendes? Uh-huh. Entonces, allí había problema, porque nosotros no teníamos razones para ir a sus barrios para nada, porque siempre era un problema grande entre nosotros. Uh-huh. Entonces yo tenía 9, 10 años, y no entendía mucho de racismo muy bien. Sé que ellos no les gustan nosotros, pero no sabía realmente por qué. con esta edad, pero era la vida de Mississippi en esta época y bueno, no era, en principio no era nada agradable, pero con tiempo nosotros sabemos que los niños, mayoría de los niños blancos no eran malos, eran sus padres. Eran sus padres que tienen esta mentalidad. Pero los hijos en el colegio eran normales, como nosotros, como niños, normal. Uh-huh. Ellos estaban confundidos también de nosotros. Y entonces, esto ayuda un poco la mentalidad, ha cambiado entre los jóvenes, porque realmente no había mucho problema entre nosotros, es que eran los padres que quería seguir con esta mentalidad de racismo. Entonces, no sé si estoy explicando bien.
Sí, sí.
But it was the parents that controlled the racism, not the kids. The kids were just like us, confused. But once we got to know each other, there was really no problem. We became friends. The blacks and the whites became friends in the school system. But you can tell, once school was over and the parents were outside, you know, the mentality changed because they had to go back home. We had to go back home. So there was no real interaction after school when the parents were around. But during school, it was, we got to know each other. We got to know each other. Okay. And there was no problem.
Aquí en Audi ens explica que el problema no eren els boixos blancs i la seva relació amb els boixos negres, clar, perquè hi havia doncs, aquesta regió profunda doncs, de molt racisme tradicional, i deia que qui eren el problema eren els pares dels xavals, els boixos, que en fi, perquè a dins de l'escola es relacionaven perfectament blancs i negres i en fi, s'estaven coneixent perquè no hi havia interacció fora, perquè vivien en veïnats diferents, però era el sortir, que hi havia els pares esperant que creaven aquesta tensió. Odi, let's talk about the ball. Let's talk about basketball. You were always interested in this game. I don't know if your father used to play. I know your brother, your older brother used to play. What about you? When did you begin to get interested in the ball?
Well, no, I wasn't always interested in basketball when I was younger. No, my father didn't play either. My father was into boxing.
Oh, wow.
But he never became a professional, but he did box at some point. But I didn't really start liking basketball until I was older.
Older, how old were you?
I mean, not older, but it was around maybe 12, 13 years old. That was older for me.
Li he preguntat si sempre li va agradar el bàsquet, em diu que no, que a casa seva son pare feia boxa, i que no, que fins que no va tenir 12 o 13 anys no va començar a practicar. Did you start practicing basketball because of your height?
No, I didn't have height when I started playing.
Oh.
I started when I was in junior high, antes de instituto. I started playing there, but I didn't I didn't start growing until I got into El Instituto in high school. My tenth grade year, I didn't play basketball because I was growing. That's when I started growing. I was probably around maybe 15, 16 years old. I grew like 7 inches in 5 months.
Excuse me, 7 inches in 5 months?
Yes. Yeah. So I was growing too fast. My bones and my muscles were not connected. I couldn't really walk because of the rapid growth. So I had to go to rehab and, you know, get my muscles and my muscles and my body catch up to one another.
Okay. Li preguntava si va començar a jugar bàsquet quan es va fer alt, i diu que va començar a jugar bàsquet abans i que de fet va créixer de cop quan tenia 15 o 16 anys, que per exemple en 5 mesos li va créixer va créixer com 20 centímetres només amb 5 mesos, i que clar, que el tio doncs no va començar a destacar perquè estava doncs d'alguna manera doncs familiaritzant amb el seu nou cos, i llavors doncs, sí que va començar a practicar més seriosament doncs en l'institut. You were one of the main players in Jackson University. You actually were chosen MVP 2 years, and then you started playing for Portland Trail Blazers. You didn't get lucky with the injuries, so you finally traveled to Europe. How was that decision? I don't know if you had ever been to Europe before, flying for your trials with Madrid and then finally signing in with Treviso.
No, I'd never been to Europe, never thought about coming to Europe. I was probably naive, probably like most Americans, didn't even know where Europe was. But, you know, when my journey was, it's been a great journey. I owe a lot of my basketball knowledge and skills to my brother, who taught me a lot about the game. And yes, when I got to Jackson State, I had good coach in high school, and they really gave me the tools I needed to improve my skills. And playing with my brother during the summers when he was playing with the San Antonio Spurs really gave me the confidence to become really, really good at my position and understanding how to dominate in college basketball in order to be recognized by the NBA. Yes, injury has always been a part of my history. Once I got drafted by the Portland Trail Blazers, I didn't play my rookie season because of a leg injury.
Yeah.
And after my rookie season, I only played 30 games my rookie season. And then after, you know, next 2 years, you know, I was, you know, pretty much healthy. And then my third year with Portland, I wanted to play more. I was playing sporadically, which means I, you know, had maybe 5 minutes here, 7 minutes there. My time wasn't consistent. And I wasn't just content sitting on the bench. A lot of times I wanted to play.
Yeah.
That's why I chose to find out where Europe was and went to Italy.
Okay.
Well, I went to Italy, to Treviso, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't, I heard stories about European basketball and before I came, and how, you know, players would not get paid, or, you know, if they didn't play well, some teams would take their passports and all these kind of things. So I heard all those stories before I came to Treviso. But I had a great experience when I got there. Treviso was, you know, my 2 years there was very, very good. The owners, the Benettones, were very good. My president, Beppe De Stefano, was a really good president for us, and my agents were good. So I had a great time in Treviso and played well. When I left Portland, I was probably averaging 6 points and maybe 5 rebounds a game. When I got to Treviso, I was averaging 21 points and 11, 12 rebounds a game. So that's what I wanted to get back to playing.
Li preguntava per la decisió de venir a Europa. Va ser molt marcada, doncs, pel seu poc protagonisme a la NBA, per mort, doncs, d'un any de lesions i després, doncs, de seure molt a la banqueta. Diu que no havia sentit pràcticament parlar mai d'Europa, que ni sabia on era pràcticament, i que s'havia sentit històries una miqueta rares sobre jugadors que no se'ls hi paga quan venen a jugar aquí, si no rendeixen, etc. I diu que no, que la seva experiència, doncs, el fitxar per Benetton de Treviso va ser excel·lent, va ser bona, i que ja va explotar com a jugador, doncs, començant, doncs, a fer molts més punts i rebots dels que estava fent a l'NBA. You finally got the offer from FC Barcelona, and the rest is history. You signed in 1997 till 1993. You won 3 leagues, 2 Copas del Rey, and you became a legend, probably the most beloved player ever in the basketball section of the club. How do you cope with that? How do you deal with this? You probably feel the love of the people every time you walk the street.
And that's the thing. I felt a strong connection to the city, to the people, when I first came to Barcelona in 87. And I felt a big, big connection with my teammates. We bonded together really, really quick. And it was, you know, it was a natural thing for me to, you know, to be in Barcelona. You know, like I said, a lot of people probably don't know, when I signed with FC Barcelona, I signed a 4-year contract, 2 years with Barcelona and 2 years with Bologna.
Yeah.
So when I finished my 2 years in Barcelona, I was obligated to go back to Italy to play the third and fourth year of their contract. But my feelings were so strong to stay with Barcelona that I didn't want to leave after my second year. I didn't want to go back to Italy. And even though the general manager from Italy was a real, he was a good friend of mine, Giancarlo Sarti, I mean, he made it almost impossible proposal for me to come back to Italy. I mean, it was a very tough decision, but my love for Barcelona and my teammates was more than, you know, the money or the things that they were offering me to come back to Italy. I was comfortable in Barcelona. Loved the people, loved the club, and loved my teammates. And, you know, that's where I wanted to stay, and that's where I wanted to play.
Li he preguntat, doncs, això, no? Aquesta relació tan especial que ha tingut sempre amb el Barça, diu que vas, des del principi vas sentir una connexió fortíssima amb el club i la ciutat i amb els companys i que s'hi va sentir còmode i era on volia estar, que després de 2 anys jugant al Barça doncs, tenia un contracte per tornar a jugar a la Bolonya, a Bolonya en aquest cas, que li farien molts sous i que la decisió va ser dura, però ell es volia quedar amb el Barça i s'hi va acabar quedant. Odi, you kept mentioning your teammates. They are all legends from Barça's history. Solozabal, Epi, Jimix, Sivilio, and so on. Who did you get along with better than the rest?
No, that's the thing. I got along with all of my teammates.
You didn't have a best friend.
Well, like I said, they were all my best friends.
Okay.
That's what made it. That's what made it so easy for me to stay in Barcelona with Nacho, with Epi, with Trombo, Jimenez. Even the young players at the time, Galilea, Roger Estrella.
Oh, yeah.
Angel Almeida, Lisa Gonzalez, Eran mis juniors.
Yeah,
in
yeah,
Barca,
yeah.
We were all teammates, man. And that's like a brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was always a special relationship I had with my teammates, Santi Abad, Piccolín Ortiz. But if I had to say one person that I spent a lot of time with is with Santi Abad.
Okay.
At this time. He was a young guy, young player, very talented, and we bonded, we had a good relationship.
Mm-hmm. Li preguntava doncs, que havia mencionat molt, esmentat molt els seus companys de l'equip, i diu que no, que li és molt difícil escollir-ne un, que era el que li preguntava, que eren com una família, com una germandat, i que es portava molt, n'ha esmentat uns quants, fins i tot els joves que van pujar, algunes també figures llegendàries, com Roger Esteller, en Galilea, en Lisart, o parlava, doncs, per exemple, de Santi Abad, que diu que s'hi va portar molt bé i que va passar molta estona junt amb ell. Odi, you won titles with Barcelona, but then, I don't know if the worst memory or the worst time with defending Barça's shirt was playing against Jugoplastica, and I don't know if you still have nightmares with that Jugoplastica team with Dino Raja, Kukoc, Perasovic, Ivanovic. I don't know. Barcelona lost 3 times against them in final fours.
You said, do I still have nightmares? That's funny. No, I don't have any nightmares anymore. But, you know, I could appreciate the journey to play against those guys. That was always my goal, is to play against the best in Europe, the best in the world. And they were the best at the time, man. And we just... We just didn't have the right moment to beat them, and I thought if I was 100% healthy in Paris, I thought maybe we would had a better chance to beat them there, but. You know, it just wasn't possible. They were a great team. You know, a lot of those guys are friends of mine to this day. Dino Raja, Savic, who became my teammate. Perasovic, Ivanovic, those guys, I see them often. And, yeah, you know, a lot of respect. The journey to get there was amazing. We played some great basketball during that time, and Yeah, the nightmare is over, man.
Ok. Li he preguntat si encara tenia mals sons amb aquella jove plàstica o Pop 84, com es va dir després, amb autèntiques estrelles del bàsquet, doncs, iugoslau i després croat, i diu que no té mals sons, que de fet se sent afortunat, honorat d'haver pogut jugar contra aquelles autèntiques figures, estrelles del bàsquet europeu, que molts d'ells després van anar a Estats Units. De fet, el Barça esmentava doncs, la Final Four de París, que el Barça va perdre la final de 5 punts. Aquell any el Barça havia quedat primer en la classificació per cap a la Final Four. Va guanyar contra el Maccabi doncs, de pana a les semifinals. La Jugoslàvia Plàstica va guanyar contra l'Escolònia Pesaro i després, doncs, com dèiem, el Barça va perdre la final per 5 punts. I deia doncs, que no estava del tot fi de salut. I bé, i no i que potser hagués sigut diferent d'aquesta manera. Just to end, Odi, you know, in Formentera, we have Orenga. You remember Orenga? Juan and Orenga,
yeah, from Estudiantes,
yeah. Estudiantes and then Real Madrid. I remember he lives in Formentera half of his time, we would say. And once we interviewed him, and I asked him who was the toughest player to defend in the Spanish league, and he mentioned you, and he said, I remember literally, I can recall it right now, that you would have your nails, your hand nails long, so under the net, you would actually scratch him or the other players so to have a better chance to get the rebound. Is that true?
It's very true.
Oh,
it's very true. I had tricks. I had tricks that I learned from the NBA, man, because there's several players from the NBA would play that way, and I thought it was a great defense mechanism to use when I got to Europe because and it worked. It worked. I would always squeeze the Michelins, the jugadores in the poste bajo just when they were about to receive the ball. And I would use everything to my advantage back then. So yes, he was right.
And okay.
Fernando Martin, he really didn't like when I did it to him. So.
Ok, li he preguntat perquè, com que en Juan Orenga és vasí nostre i diu quan no està entrenant fora, doncs passa el temps aquí a Formentera, un cop en una entrevista aquí a Radio Illa mos va dir que l'Audi, sota els taulers, en la defensa, es deixava les ungles llargues i els esgarrapava, els clavava les ungles perquè així doncs, tingués avantatge a l'hora d'agafar doncs, rebots. I va dir que sí, va confirmar que sí, que és veritat, que ho feia, que havia tingut, doncs, en aquest cas, doncs, havia pres coses a la NBA i que diu que en Fernando Martín, sobretot, que va ser doncs, també després al Portland, doncs, també una figura del bàsquet espanyol allà, fins que, dissortadament, doncs, va morir en accident de cotxe, doncs, que a ell no li agradava mica en Fernando Martín. Odi, your nickname was Atomic Dog. I don't know if it's true that who gave it to you was Clay Thompson's father because of your dunking.
No, it's very true because Michael Thompson, he was my teammate in Portland and my mentor in Portland. He was actually one of the guys that taught me a lot of these tricks that I learned. And yeah, he gave me the nickname Atomic Dog because of my style of play, the way I dunked the basketball, and because I would always try to break the rim when I dunked. So he gave me the nickname Atomic Dog after some strong dunks I had in games against the Dallas Mavericks, and The name is with me the rest of my life.
I assume that very few people in Spain, in the Spain, in Spanish league, or in the Palau Blaugrana, had never experienced before. I don't know, witnessing someone dunking like you would do it. Can you remember how would the audience react in Palau Blaugrana when would you dunk?
Oh man, we had a younger crowd, a younger audience when I played, and the fans were electric in the Palau. It gave me the energy to play hard. Gave us the energy to play hard. And when I would dunk the basketball, the whole arena would erupt, and they would always say, "Notice, notice, notice." And so I loved it. I loved performing in the Palau, man. And, the fans were fantastic. And, a lot of my fans are the older fans that's in Barcelona today, because they've been there forever. And they're still fans of mine. And
Li preguntava pel seu sobrenom del quissó atòmic, i que li va posar el pare d'en Clyde Thompson, en Michael Thompson, per la seva manera d'esmatxar, que era una brutalitat. I de fet li preguntava que la Lliga Espanyola fins als anys 80 ningú segurament esmatxava com tu, com quan vas arribar, i em diu que sí, que el Palau cada cop que esmatxava, doncs la gent es tornava boja, que hi havia un ambient impressionant de gent molt jove i que cridaven Norris, Norris, i efectivament això és el record que tenim molts, com es penjava el número 14 del Barça. Ode, it was a huge pleasure. Thank you for receiving us, thank you for accepting doing this talk, and enjoy your time in Canary Islands.
Hey, well, thank you for the interview. Thank you for the time. Hope your audience enjoyed the interview. Always like talking to you guys, man. You guys have always treated me with the good respect. Tonight on what channel? In Teledeporte va salir programa Vintage, reportaje sobre the Atomic Dog.
Ah, muy bien.
A las 10 esta noche.
Ah, doncs mireu, qui vulgui, que aquesta nit a les 10 al Teledeporte, un reportatge sobre Atomic Dog. En tenim un altre que també està a l'informe Plus d'Ordinarlis, Atomic Dog, que el podeu tenir també a Movistar, o sigui que tothom que vulgui doncs pugui veure la seva història d'un dels jugadors més especials, més importants del bàsquet en aquest país. Odi, thank you very much.
Sí, esta noche vas a ver imágenes que mucha gente no ha visto nunca en el programa. Yo tampoco he visto esta imagen. Va a ser muy interesante.
Pues lo veremos. Gracias.
Venga, gracias.
Un abrazo.
Venga, adiós.